I'm telling these tears, go and fall away, fall away. Oh, may the last one burn into flames. Freedom, freedom, I can't move.
Hey,
freedom,
good afternoon. Matt Rothschild here. Maggie's a little under the weather, so I got tapped on the shoulder here to come out of the bullpen. And I'm here with the multi-talented Brian Kelly, who's the Drew Holiday of civic media.
You know what? I'll take that. I'll take that.
There you go. Put it on your business card. And, you know, this is a pivotal week in politics. We've got the debate coming up on Thursday. I think the big immunity decision should be coming down from the U.S. Supremes on Friday. I got my fingers crossed and hold my breath, see if I can hold it till Friday. But that's going to be monumental. We may have Jim Santel in here at 3:30 if he can get out of court in time to come and talk to us about what he thinks is going to happen there.
My money is on the court going long at all times, nearly every time. I have faith in our government. I just know that the court system and timing is just not, it just doesn't, justice doesn't care about what time it is.
Yeah, justice delayed, justice denied. I mean, maybe they'll go into July. That would be rare. But, you know, they've been giving Trump every benefit of the doubt here and working the calendar to his benefit. I'm predicting on this a 7-2. There's no blanket immunity, with Alito and Clarence saying the president can never be prosecuted by anybody anywhere, anytime. But I think they'll send it back, with Roberts writing the decision, send it back to the lower court judge and have her determine what part of the president's job was official duties and what wasn't official duties. And trying to destroy the peaceful transfer of power is not really in the job description of the president of the United States. I'm hoping they'll rule that way.
One would think that that's a pretty, you know, straightforward, hey, here you go decision. I am interested in, if it does go 7-2, I would be interested in knowing the briefing of the dissent. I don't want to read the whole thing, but.
You know, I've got a hunch that Alito would even say that the state courts that were prosecuting Trump were not allowed to do so. And his view, he'd throw out all the guilties, all 34 guilties on those felonies.
Now, this is a guy who uses English common law as his precedent for a lot of things that he believes. And again, I don't know if he's aware. We threw off the English government and established our own.
English common law in the New Testament, I think that's what he looks to.
Which, again, things we didn't incorporate into our Constitution. I'm just saying.
Things our founders were trying to get beyond.
No, I'm not saying they threw out the entirety of English law, and yes, a lot of it is modeled after that and things like that. I'm not saying that it was just like, hey, blah, blah, blah. But again, these guys are not using anything new. They're using the ye olde terms.
And I like that Justice Coney Barrett was taking Clarence Thomas to town on using tradition. He was using tradition as his litmus test. This goes against tradition.
Boy.
She said, well, where is that secured in our system of jurisprudence? So the split on the right on the U.S. Supreme Court right now is pretty interesting.
Boy, that's actually really good to hear from me. Yeah. That's actually good news.
Yeah. She and Roberts are kind of carving out a middle position on some of these issues, not all of them by any stretch of the imagination. If you want to weigh in on this, just join our conversation here, me and Brian, at 855-752-2482. That's 855-752-2482. I want to give you a heads up as to what's coming up. At 2:30, we're going to be talking with Michelle Velasquez, Chief Strategy Officer for Planned Parenthood of Wisconsin and Planned Parenthood Advocates of Wisconsin, talking about, of course, the second anniversary of the Dobbs decision. And that's part of a discussion of health care that I know Maggie wanted to focus on this week in her top 100 things that Biden has done right for people. One of the big issues is health care, and that's the focus this week on the Maggie Dawn Show. And in keeping with that, we're also at 3 o'clock going to have Robert Craig, the executive director of Citizen Action Wisconsin, talk about health care. He knows more about health care than anybody else.
If you ever wanted to know anything about Badger Care and the expansion of Medicaid, that guy is the person to talk to. Absolutely.
So when Luke Mathers came out of the dugout and tapped me on the shoulder and waved me in from the bullpen, I said, well, and it's healthcare, I got to call up Robert Craig. And he said, yes, yeah, so he'll be joining us, so that'll be kind of fun. And you can join us, too, anytime by calling 855-752-2482 here on the Maggie Dawn Show. I'm Matt Rothschild here with Brian Kelly. And, yeah, this big Supreme Court case is what I've been waiting for. I think it was disgraceful, number one, that the U.S. Supreme Court didn't even took up the case. I thought they should have just let the appellate court's decision, which was very strong, which says, you know, we don't have kings here. No one's above the law. Let that stand. That seemed to be pretty much a bedrock American principle of jurisprudence. But no, they had to take it up. They had to do a four corners offense on it and just slow the game down and stall to the last minute. So Jack Smith, even if he gets a decision that he likes, is going to be hard pressed to get a conviction before election time. And this is the case more than any of the other cases against Trump that I want to see pursued. I want to see Trump found guilty of. I want to see him held accountable for what happened on January 6th, because for me, January 6th is the big litmus test. There are a lot of conservatives I know, a lot of people who voted for Trump, who were not happy about what happened on January 6th. And to me, that's the divining line. If you're a far-right MAGA person and you're apologizing for what happened on January 6th or denying what happened on January 6th or giddy about what happened on January 6th, we can't really have a conversation, I don't think. And I'm for conversations with almost anybody.
Yeah, and that's not... And again, what they did once they got in, it wasn't like, hey, we're finally doing stuff and this is what we're going to put in here. Like, they didn't get up there and like, we're going to establish a law of this. They defecated on the walls and put their feet up on people's desks and just basically showed they had no reverence for government whatsoever. It wasn't like, hey, let's go in. I don't like the government and here's what we're going to do. And this is our list of demands. Now I have the press's voice. We've stormed the Capitol. We have the Capitol and now we're going to talk. It was
no
a bunch of hooligan idiots.
Yeah. It was just a frat party in there. No list of demands, no petitions, no nothing. Just going in there and being hooligans. And so the fact that Trump calls them patriots, it calls them political prisoners, is another reason why no one should vote for Donald Trump this time around, because you cannot apologize for that kind of behavior. You should not make it out like they were doing good. They were doing the opposite of that, and they need to be held accountable. And that's why the Justice Department has convicted hundreds of these guys already. And I hope there'll be hundreds more, but especially, you know, the head honcho. He needs to be held responsible. Even Mitch McConnell said he was morally responsible, Trump was, for what happened on January 6th.
And right after he acquitted him.
Yeah, right after he... No, it was right before.
Oh, right before.
It was in the middle of his speech on the second impeachment.
Oh, that's right.
The evening of January 6th, Mitch McConnell was giving his speech, and it sounded to me while I was sitting there listening to it live, watching it live, that he was, oh, my God, he's going to vote for impeachment. They're going to really impeach this guy, and we'd be rid of Donald Trump, at least as a possible next president. But instead, Mitch McConnell, in a huge strikeout when the clutch time came, decided to let it go.
He wasn't the Mighty Casey, even, by the way.
Not Mighty Casey. No.
But then, like,
no profile and courage.
Well, you know what he did? He's like, he thought to himself, let me look down the bench of the people that would be possibly running instead of him. Oh, I have nobody. Okay, might as well go with that guy.
But why didn't they vote? Why didn't those potential Republican presidential candidates vote to impeach? Or tell everybody
to vote
to impeach.
They just wanted to run to raise money for themselves. That's what they do.
Oh, they want it. I mean, James Carville has the funny line. He goes into the U.S. Senate and says, Mr. President, and 99 people turn around and say yes. They all want to be president of the United States. They all think they should be president of the United States.
Yeah, but Trump has also made it so that you can make money at running for president.
Oh, for sure.
Like, I mean, people were doing it before him, but he was like, that's a great grift.
Well, and also if finally they don't have their huge ambitions realized, Plan B is always cash in as a lobbyist.
Oh yeah, and then you can sell your constituents or the people that were going to vote for you to the highest bidder or whoever. Oh my goodness, there's a lot of things you can do with that popularity.
Yeah, I mean it's unfortunate that revolving door revolves as quickly as it does, and it's scuzzy no matter who's doing it from which party. And it's very disappointing when you see people who you admired for their stands all of a sudden turn around and take the cash.
Yeah, and it happened kind of quick with the Dems, too. I mean, they turned right around and said, basically Obama made a phone call over the weekend and said, hey, listen, COVID, et cetera, we need to go and beat Trump, and we got to coalesce. Biden's the guy. I'm tapping Biden. Everyone tap out, and good luck, Sanders. We'll see you, bye.
Yeah, this is when they ganged up on Bernie Sanders, and that was something that I think was unforgivable. I think both Obama did it and Hillary Clinton, were throwing their weight around, telling Pete Buttigieg to get out of the race, telling the senator from Minnesota to get out of the race, Klobuchar. And the Massachusetts senator, they said she could stay in the race because she was taking votes from Bernie. So that was the squeeze play on Bernie. And it was so disgusting to watch in real time. But, you know, there it was. What are you going to do? We've got Joe from Madison. I appreciate her calls all the time. Should we take her now or take her after the bounce? All right, you're on, Joe.
Hey, two questions for you, Matt. And based on kind of your first one is based on your expertise and understanding the slimy ways that politics can go and the underhanded ways that money can change hands in politics. I'm curious what you're looking at in this immunity ruling in terms of what it may set up, in terms of what a president may be able to do in terms of dirty money. The second thing I would ask of your opinion of for you and is this sense of, if this immunity case goes through, isn't it going to be the case that every single administration could have every single judgment or every single decision looked at again and again and again, right? I mean, we are setting up a lot of work for lawyers, don't you think? I mean, when you say you're not immune, that means you're not immune. That means you are stuck by the rules that everyone else has. So I'd be curious what your reaction is to that.
Joe, thanks so much for the call. It's going to be full employment for the lawyers, no doubt. But I'll answer the major question after the break. Thanks so much for the call, Joe. You always have great questions. I'm Matt Rothschild. You're subbing in for Maggie Dawn. You're listening to The Maggie Dawn Show on the Civic Media Radio Network.
Hey, I'ma keep on running because the winner don't quit on themselves.
We have a president, not a king.
Rothschild with you this afternoon on the Maggie Dawn Show. Maggie's just a little bit under the weather, so I'm here taking the wheel for the afternoon for her. I hope she recovers quickly and is here tomorrow, which I assume she will be. Joe had called and talked about the consequences of the U.S. Supreme Court decision on this immunity case, which we're expecting any day now. I'm predicting it's going to be on Friday. And she raises an interesting aspect that I hadn't really pondered before the call, and that is, what is this going to do about dirty money in our politics? And it's interesting that she asked that because, of course, this is the U.S. Supreme Court that gave us the Citizens United decision in 2010, which said corporations and other groups can spend unlimited amounts of money to tell us who to vote for or who not to vote for, so long as they're not coordinating with the candidate, though proving coordination is next to impossible. And so they can give it to the PAC, who's now being run by the former chief of staff of the candidate who's running for office and knows exactly what the candidate's doing and wants to do with that money or have done with that money. So it stinks to high heaven, the Citizens United decision. And her point is, well, what if someone is flagrantly violating even the loose rules on campaign finance, the loose laws on campaign finance, and becomes president? If they say there's absolute immunity, then the person is free and clear. Could have gotten there dirty, but there's no tagging them afterwards. I don't think that's going to be the majority decision. I believe Alito and Thomas may be proposing such a thing in their dissent, if I hope they are in the dissent. But I just think official acts however they're defined by a judge, may not be prosecutable. For instance, if the president of the United States is bombing another country under his commander-in-chief authority and kills a civilian, that civilian, even if it's an American, can't sue the president of the United States afterwards. That's going to be, you know, one of their claims, and that would tie the commander-in-chief's hands, they're going to say. But what if, you know, what if the president of the United States, you know, stabs someone to death? Is that official duties? No, that's not official duties. So, you know, the case of dirty money, the president gets in on dirty money. If the U.S. Supreme Court says there's only immunity for official acts, then he could be prosecuted because he was breaking the law. That wasn't part of his duty when he was president. Or if he was an elected official underneath being president, running and accepting, you know, illegal campaign contributions so you can get to be president of the United States is not protectable. So I'm hoping there'll be a decision that will allow, number one, Trump to be prosecuted for what he did on January 6th. That's the be-all and end-all as far as I'm concerned, but also establishes a precedent so that other people who are occupying the Oval Office don't have a get-out-of-jail-free card for any felony they want to commit. And so that's what I'm expecting to happen, even though the U.S. Supreme Court should have just settled with the appellate decision, which was fine. Instead, they got into this very legalistic argument. I was listening to the argument about, you know, what is an official act? What isn't an official act? Actually, it was Clarence Thomas, one of the few times he ever speaks in court, asked the first question, and it was about official acts of the president. And then I think he went back to sleep, actually, Brian.
Wow. That's very good for him to be conscious for his own speaking role. That's very nice. My question is, let's say they rule like, all right, dude's immune, he can do whatever he wants. What's to stop Joe Biden from abusing his power to go and stop Trump? Let's say making an official act, him seizing all of Trump's campaign funds because he'd be a detriment to the United States if he were to be elected, and all of his official acts to go and stop him from running, therefore, would be, you know, completely fine because he's immune because he's doing official acts as a president. But how many things can he do to stop Trump from actually succeeding in becoming president? Because as an official act, he can say, I think Trump is a threat to democracy. So he also happens to be my opponent. But as president, I can go and do these official acts to stop this threat to democracy.
Right, Brian. I mean, and that kind of an argument was raised at the trial level and the appellate level. What if the president of the United States says he's going to send out the 82nd Airborne or the Marines to go apprehend or do away with his challenger?
Officially, an official act.
Yeah, because the person's a threat to the United States or whatever they're making up. And so, you know, that was something that the Justice Department put on the table, and the Trump lawyers didn't really have a good answer for that because there's no good answer.
No. And by the way, can we just, I can't believe I have to say this out loud, but I do want to say for the record, I don't want that to happen. I don't want Joe Biden to do that, and I don't want him to have the ability to do that.
Yeah, no president should have the ability to do that. That's the whole reason why we have a government that's supposed to be of laws, not of men and women. But the question is, for the Alitos and Clarence Thomases of the world, you know, what kind of country are you trying to create here if you're giving immunity to the president? We'd be back to, you know, a king. We'd be back to a monarchy. That's what you were talking about before, Brian. You're absolutely right. So there are some real fundamental things, some fundamental principles to be articulated, to be redeemed this week, because chances are that decision is going to come out on Friday. And if the conservative majority in bank in total decides to give Trump a total get out of jail free card and every other president after that, we're in a world of hurt.
Yeah. How do you undo that? Do you have to wait like 30, 40 years and then just undo it like they did with Dobbs?
Well, I mean, they're voting. You vote in and someone to be president.
Is there a government in 30, 40 years if that happens?
But yeah, I mean, who would leave office if they can stay in office the way Trump tried to stay in office? I mean, so that's why when people say, and it's kind of trite, I know it's kind of a truism, democracy's on the ballot. I know people are sick of hearing it. But you know what? Democracy is on the ballot this time around. And when people say this is the most important election of our lifetimes, and you've heard that all before, and we all just kind of fall asleep because we've been told it since we were to. This isn't, you know, Bill Clinton against Bob Dole, folks. This is something where the difference is enormous and where our democracy really is on the line. So, you know, I am encouraging everyone who isn't all that excited about Joe Biden to get over it and vote for Joe Biden. And, you know, I was a Bernie guy from day one, but, you know, Biden has been a better president than I thought he'd be, especially on domestic issues.
Same.
Especially on health care, especially on union rights, especially on the environment, especially on education. These are things that Maggie Dawn's been talking about here on her show. She's doing this incredible 100 things Biden has done for you and me. And this week we're going to be talking about health care. And right after the break, we're going to be coming back with Michelle Velasquez, who's Chief Strategy Officer of Planned Parenthood Wisconsin and Planned Parenthood Advocates of Wisconsin. We're going to be talking about the second anniversary of the Dobbs decision, which is today. So stay with us after the break. You're listening to the Maggie Dawn Show. I'm Matt Rothschild here pitching in for Maggie. She's a little under the weather today.
We're not just doing this for money. We're doing it for a load of money.
Are we ready? I am. Because it's all about control. And I've got lots of it.
Matt Rothschild here. I'm subbing in for Maggie Dawn here on the Maggie Dawn Show. And thank you for listening here on the Civic Media Radio Network across the great state of Wisconsin. Today is the second anniversary of the Dobbs decision by the U.S. Supreme Court overturning Roe v. Wade. And with me to talk about it right now is Michelle Velasquez. She's the Chief Strategy Officer for Planned Parenthood Wisconsin and Planned Parenthood Advocates of Wisconsin. Michelle Velasquez, thanks for being on Civic Media.
Hi, Matt. Thanks so much for having me.
Oh, it's great to see you. It's great to hear you. Must be a busy day for you.
Yeah, you know, the last couple of years have been pretty busy. we are, you know, of course, very happy that Planned Parenthood of Wisconsin was able to resume abortion services last September, so about 15 months after that initial court decision came down and abortion services had to be suspended. People in Wisconsin were traveling to neighboring states like Illinois and Minnesota for abortion care. But since last September, PPWI has resumed abortion services. But there's still a lot of work to be done. I mean, Wisconsin, that court ruling that enabled PPWI to resume care is a lower court ruling. It's a Dane County Circuit Court ruling. There's that case is on a petition for bypass right now in the Wisconsin Supreme Court. That is pending. PPWI filed its own lawsuit back in February of this year, arguing that our state's constitution protects bodily autonomy, which includes, of course, the right to an abortion, the ability of people to choose their own path in life, whether or not to become parents, the right of physicians and other healthcare providers to provide that care. And so we are all just sort of anxiously awaiting to see what the Wisconsin Supreme Court will ultimately do with those cases.
Unfortunately, we have a liberal majority now on the Wisconsin Supreme Court. And one of the reasons we do is because of the Dobbs decision.
Yeah, you know, I think that the overturning of Roe really brought this issue to the forefront. But the reality is that Roe was honestly never really enough. Over the, you know, 49 years between Roe and Dobbs, state legislatures across the country really chipped away at abortion access time and time again, and we have some of the most restrictive laws here in Wisconsin. So that issue is certainly front and center. It has galvanized a ton of people to get out to the polls and to vote for candidates that will protect their rights.
Were you, I mean, one thing that struck me about the Dobbs decision as far as Wisconsin goes is at some point Democrats had the governorship here and we had, you know, the state assembly and the state Senate, and yet they left that 1848 law on the books. I wish they'd taken it off. That must have struck you too as a big omission on the part of the Democrats when they had the power to get rid of that thing.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, thank you for raising that. I mean, if that law had just been repealed and had been off the books after the Dobbs decision came down, there wouldn't have been this sort of question about whether or not Wisconsin had a criminal abortion ban that was enforceable, you know, which was the whole reason that abortion services were suspended and so many people were without care or had to travel if they could travel. And so I think that really highlights how I think people have relied on this Roe as a backstop and as just sort of being like, everything's great. We have this constitutional right. But like I said, Roe was never really enough. I mean, not too long after Roe was decided, the Hyde Amendment passed, which restricted the ability of lower income patients who are on state assistance for Medicaid or different Medicaid programs from accessing abortion with the use of that state funded Medicaid. And so really, you know, I think that I wish people had been paying attention in the same way.
I think they're
really
paying
attention time ago.
I think they're paying attention now. And I got to believe if Democrats with these fairer maps that we got now were able to get control of the state assembly and the state Senate, that they would pass a law getting rid of overturning, wiping off the books, that ridiculous 1848 law, which obviously was written, you know, 70 years before women even had the right to vote, for God's sake. So I think it's absolutely a new climate with bigger, greater awareness of this issue and the need to act in ways that protect women's health.
Absolutely. I think you are 100% right. And I appreciate you also highlighting the need to repeal that law, because as we know, courts can overturn themselves and their prior decisions. And so getting rid of that law is a proactive measure that the state assembly and the state Senate can take to protect abortion care. And they can also do proactive things like pass legislation that includes a statutory right to contraception, a statutory right to abortion, and maybe ultimately someday a constitutional amendment granting affirmatively those rights in our state constitution. So this issue isn't only about abortion. We see attacks on contraception, IVF, gender affirming care nationally. And so I really hope that people keep this front and center in the upcoming months.
I'm speaking with Michelle Velasquez. She's Chief Strategy Officer for Planned Parenthood of Wisconsin and Planned Parenthood Advocates of Wisconsin. I mean, you're right to bring up the other issues, including this question of, you know, contraception. There's a war on contraception right now from the far right. They're not stopping with this Dobbs decision. And again, IVF too, and gender affirming surgery and procedures. So, you know, they got what they wanted. The far right got what they wanted. But there are consequences for that. And I want to talk about the human consequences first and then the political consequences. The Dobbs decision, what have been the human consequences for women across the country?
So the consequences of the Dobbs have been absolutely devastating. People are either forced to carry pregnancies that they didn't desire. They are forced to travel if they have the resources to do so. We have entire portions of this country where there's just no access to abortion care, but it goes beyond that. There's actually sort of areas where then there are fewer OBGYNs to take care of pregnant women's health. And people who are experiencing problems in their pregnancy are struggling to find that care. We have physicians who, there's a sort of chilling effect, right, of, well, I'm going to get jailed if I do this. I'm not really sure if this meets the exception. How sick does somebody have to be in order to meet that threshold for maybe an exception to save the life of a pregnant person.
You know,
right now.
Excuse me for interrupting, Michelle. I just wanted to amplify that point because I know a doctor, you know, OBGYN in Janesville here in Wisconsin, who had a patient who was pregnant, woman was pregnant and in severe distress, really severe distress. And she had to get two other doctors to come in and sign off on basically saving this woman's life by giving her an abortion. And it was really touch and go to hear her tell it to me. And that's happening around the country.
Absolutely. There was a really well-written Journal Sentinel article back in, I want to say March, maybe February or March of this year, about a woman in northwestern Wisconsin or northern Wisconsin who had some really serious pregnancy complications and ultimately needed to travel out of state to get that care. And so we're talking about people who are in distress, people who have really fragile medical circumstances who are now being forced to potentially travel hundreds or even thousands of miles away to get that care. And that's just really, in my opinion, really unacceptable.
And you guys at Planned Parenthood helped establish a clinic in Illinois, in Rockford, didn't you? When for a while there, things were suspended in Wisconsin.
So that Rockford Health Center or the Rockford Clinic is not a clinic of Planned Parenthood. Planned Parenthood of Wisconsin did staff the Waukegan Health Center, which is Planned Parenthood Illinois' health center. And so the PPWI staff and physicians went down to Waukegan 1 to 2 days a week, which really increased the capacity of that health center because Illinois has really become a place where people from so many parts of the country are traveling to for abortion care. So having the PPWI staff there was really, really vital to making sure that there, we could give folks the most access, you know, as possible post-ops. So this is just, it's been pretty devastating. I mean, we're talking about people's, you know, their health, their lives, their future fertility, the economic cost to this. UW Core put out a study not too long ago about how just even somebody having to go from the Milwaukee area generally to Illinois cost in total was, you know, somewhere around $1,200 to $1,400, I believe. It was a lot of money. And there's studies that show most Americans can't afford an unexpected expense of $400 to $500. And so we're not talking about a small amount of money, not to mention the toll it takes on people's health.
And were you seeing a lot of women in Wisconsin having to go to Illinois or Minnesota when this happened?
Absolutely. I mean, I want to say, you know, I can't tell you exact numbers, but it was essentially all of the patients that would normally be seen at the health centers around Wisconsin who were needing to travel. So we're talking about hundreds of people every month traveling out of state for care.
And then politically, you know, this was something that the right had been working on for decades, and they got what they wanted. And Trump was bragging about it, has been bragging about it, though he backpedals sometimes. Politically, what are the ramifications of the Dobbs decision?
You know, so I think that, well, I'll just go back a second about the anti-choice movement and the far right having sort of what they want. They're sort of at the midpoint, I think, of what they want. There was a really interesting interview just a couple of months, a few months after Dobbs on The Daily, The New York Times, The Daily, and they interviewed Jim Bopp, who was the legal director for one of the national right to life or anti-choice organizations, who said the fall of Roe is really their midpoint. What they actually want is a national ban on abortion. They want to make abortions sort of illegal or outlawed or just so impossible to get that even if it's not technically outlawed, there's just such a web of access to navigate, a web of legislation to navigate. It makes it nearly impossible to get. So that's really, I think, what their ultimate goal is. And I think that, unfortunately, this issue has now become even more politicized. It's, you know, this has to be, it's not just about what can happen in the state houses, but Whereas, you know, prior to Roe, we were really looking at sort of, I think, thinking about this issue in a more national framework. Now this is every state creating its own laws. We have states that are trying to restrict the movement of their residents to other states to access care, or restrict physicians from providing care, you know, by mail. So it's just, it's highly, highly politicized. It is in the courts. It's in the state houses. It's in, you know, Congress and the Senate. It is absolutely, absolutely everywhere. And, you know, even agencies like the FDA. Now there was a lawsuit, which SCOTUS just recently decided on standing. So for now, mifepristone, the abortion medication pill, remains available and legal.
That was a relief, right?
That was a huge relief. And I would just remind people that that's on standing alone. And so, that means folks get another kick at the can, essentially.
Well, can you hang on after the break? I want to talk about the upcoming election and what you at Planned Parenthood Advocates of Wisconsin and Planned Parenthood Advocates nationally are doing about this really crucial election coming up in November. So I'm speaking with Michelle Velasquez, Chief Strategy Officer for Planned Parenthood Advocates of Wisconsin and Planned Parenthood of Wisconsin. I'm Matt Rothschild. I'm subbing in here for Maggie Dawn on The Maggie Dawn Show on the Civic Media Radio Network. We'll be right back. Here. I'm subbing in for Maggie Dawn. It's just a little bit under the weather today. I hope she'll be back tomorrow. You're listening to The Maggie Dawn Show on the Civic Media Radio Network all across this great state of Wisconsin. And with me up till the top of the hour is Michelle Velasquez. She's the Chief Strategy Officer of Planned Parenthood Wisconsin and Planned Parenthood Advocates of Wisconsin. And thanks for staying with us, Michelle.
Absolutely. Thanks again for having me.
So I'm reading on AP News today that Planned Parenthood will spend $40 million ahead of November's elections to bolster President Joe Biden and leading congressional Democrats. Talk to me about that.
Yeah, so that's actually Planned Parenthood Action Fund, which is the national office, the advocacy and political arm of Planned Parenthood Federation. And so they really are the group that gets involved in those national electoral races and back candidates, of course, for all of the offices up and down the ticket. And, you know, I think you see that, I can't speak for the insiders in that organization, of course, but I think you see that kind of investment because that shows just how much is at stake this coming election for all of us here who need access to this healthcare, for our friends and family that need access to this healthcare. We absolutely know that there are Republican candidates who want to see abortion fully banned, who want to limit at least some forms of contraception, namely things like IUDs, emergency contraception, things that people rely on to make decisions about their reproductive health and their reproductive lives. And so I think that's really why you see that kind of investment.
Michelle, I was talking with a young one, very smart young woman, just graduated from UW-Madison the other day. And she was really ambivalent about this Biden-Trump race, especially because of what's been going on in Gaza. If you had, you know, 1 minute with her, what would your pitch be to her about why it's important?
Sure. I mean, I think that what I would try to really center about this election is that the consequences of it are going to have an impact on our lives here in Wisconsin, on the people we love and care about, and their ability, again, to get the healthcare that they need. when they need it. It's not just about the policies that the president can make. It's really about some of the decisions in appointments to the federal bench, who is being appointed to as the head of agencies like the FDA, like the DOJ, like Health and Human Services. And so those are the types of repercussions that are really felt and seen for long after that president leaves office. We have seen what Trump appointees, what kind of decisions have been coming out of SCOTUS. They have several judges who were appointed by former President Trump. And so I would just ask people to really think about those kinds of decisions that a president makes that impact us for, you know, a generation.
And at Planned Parenthood Advocates of Wisconsin, what can you do politically as far as endorsing candidates or doing great political work?
So PPAWI, Planned Parenthood Advocates of Wisconsin, is the political and advocacy arm for Planned Parenthood of Wisconsin. And that includes some political and electoral work. So that's really at the state level. So PPAWI has already endorsed some candidates for upcoming elections. And that's really, you know, they'll have run programs in the past for GOTV, for IE programming. So obviously if we've endorsed a candidate, we might put out some mailers or things really just to promote the candidates. And the folks that PPAWI endorses are all people who have really a history and of being committed to protecting and expanding sexual and reproductive health care rights, including abortion.
And Michelle Velasquez, are you still looking for political volunteers, people to knock on doors, do stuff in envelopes, all that stuff, or are you at capacity already?
No, absolutely. PPAWI is always happy to engage with volunteers. Our organizers work year-round in communities, so some of the work we do is political and electoral, and some of it's also just really grassroots organizing and talking about these issues every single day in communities across the state so that people are aware of what is going on in their own communities and in their own state house as far as sexual and reproductive health and education goes. So PPAWI.org is where folks can learn more information and they can give us their information if they're interested in volunteering. And there's all different ways to get involved.
So the website again, ppawi.org for Planned Parenthood Advocates of Wisconsin.org. My guest has been Michelle Velasquez. She's the Chief Strategy Officer for Planned Parenthood Advocates of Wisconsin and Planned Parenthood of Wisconsin. It's great to see you again. Thanks so much for being on the show, Michelle.
Nice to see you again too, Matt. Thank you so much for having me.
And thanks for all your tremendous work too.
Oh, thank you. Have a good rest of your day.
Yeah, you too. So we've been speaking about the second anniversary of the Dobbs decision here, and I guess we have a caller on the line, Brian, is that right? No caller?
Just left, but that the caller wanted to advocate that she was adopted and advocates for the rights of anyone to choose and should not have that taken away. That was the gist of the call. Well,
and no one's saying you shouldn't have the right to adopt out either. It's just that you should have the choice. That's the whole
absolutely, and
the whole deal here.
I some of the greatest people I know have been adopted. So
now you, we may have a little. Do we have a little audio from the president's spokesperson, Karine Jean-Pierre, on this very question?
But
the Dobbs decision.
Yeah, the Dobbs decision. Let's be clear about that.
It's extreme. It's out of touch, and it's wrong. This could never happen in. This should never happen in America. The aftermath has been devastating for women's health and lives. All of these attacks we're seeing currently right now on reproductive health care, whether it's abortion care, IVF, or contraception, are made possible because of the overturning of Roe v. Wade. And it's exactly why President Biden and Vice President Harris are fighting back and urging Congress to restore the protections of Roe v. Wade in federal law.
That's Karine Jean-Pierre, the president's spokesperson. That's a job I don't ever want to have.
No.
I don't know.
You lose every time.
I don't know why anyone would sign up for that. A great investigative reporter, Seema Hersh, was Eugene McCarthy's press secretary for a week, and then he quit. He couldn't hack it. That's how I would have been. I'm Matt Rothschild. I'm subbing in here for Maggie Dawn on The Maggie Dawn Show. She's just a little bit under the weather. She should be back tomorrow. I'm here with the one and only Brian Kelly on The Maggie Dawn Show, and we'll be right back with Robert Craig on the Civic Media Radio Network.